And we discussed previously, achati, yonati, tamati, the importance of giving our spouse the feeling that they are singular, that they're singularly important. And we discussed that this breaks down into two things. One is, she should really be important to you. She should really be number one, which is easier said than done. And number two is to give her that feeling. And we said the two are separate concepts. Yes?
No, I just was going to talk about Hashem tells you if you will be the...
Thank you. The next concept we have to discuss, which really is a continuation of that concept, is the concept of loyalty. Now, by loyalty, I don't mean fidelity. Obviously, that I don't think we have to discuss. I'm talking about loyalty. So loyalty gets complicated. Let's imagine you're sitting at a Shabbos table, and there's an argument, a very important argument, one which you really can't just let slide. They're discussing what was served at dessert of your wedding. Your in-laws are adamant that it was chocolate mousse, and your wife is saying, no, I remember clearly it was apple pie. And they're having it out back and forth. Now, this is one of those very important arguments where you just can't sit idly by. You have to put in your two cents. You remember clearly that your in-laws are right. There was a discussion of apple pie. Your wife definitely voted for apple pie, and she was vetoed, and she's forgetting. You even remember how she got some chocolate mousse on her wedding gown, and you weren't sure if you should tell her or not. It might upset her. So you remember clearly that your in-laws are right. Where are your loyalties? So you're going to side with your in-laws, and your wife's going to say, whose side are you on? And you're going to say, but it's a fact. We had chocolate mousse. I'm very sorry, dear. So, you don't have to get involved. And when they ask you, don't you remember what we served? You go like, gee, it's been so long ago. It's been 2 weeks now. Who remembers? I was sitting next to the choice of my life. You think I paid attention what dessert was? Notice I didn't lie. I didn't say I did. I didn't say I didn't. Yeah, I said, you think I did? Sometimes men are really stupid in many things, this included, where men will say, but it's the truth, their parents are right. Why do I have to just ignore it? Why do you have to say anything? I don't think I'm giving an argument that's irrelevant. You'll be surprised at how many times we make this mistake in issues that are really irrelevant. Was it Shakespeare that said, the road to hell is paved with good intentions? Your wife is insistent it is. And you know it was Dante, so you have to correct her. No. Where are your loyalties? What difference does it make? But she's convinced. She says, don't you remember that line in Hamlet? It was Polonius, I'm telling you. And you're there and you're thinking, really? So you just nod and you don't have to say anything. Why is that important? So loyalty, if she's very important to me, then I don't have to make issue over things that are non-issues. And many of the things we argue about, I say a joke, but it's true. That very often couples, their arguments revolve around, no you didn't, yes I did, no you didn't, yes I did, but I told you you didn't, but I told you I did.
Is this always called loyalty? What are you saying now?
Wait, we'll get there. Wait.
If it's a question about Torah,
we'll get there.
You cannot just say, if it's wrong, if you're going to do a halachically wrong thing.
So let's take the case of Torah. You're sitting at the Shabbos table, and there's a discussion, and she says, Avram Avinu had two kids. And a guest says, no, he didn't, he had many kids. And she says, no, Avram Avinu had Yishmael, and Yitzchak. And the guest says, no, I remember he had more kids. So she says, I'm telling you, Yishmael and Yitzchak. And they both look at you. So you could sit there and do this. You could look at the guest and say, who were the other kids? You sure? So why do you have to know? How many times do I walk into class and guys are having a conversation and a discussion and this one says, of course you're supposed to say Yalev Yavo on Hanukkah. And the other one says, no, 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 you don't say Aleph Yom on Hanukkah. And they're arguing, and they don't ask me. So I just sit quietly, don't ask me. Why is it my business? No one asked me. I know we don't say Aleph Yavo except for Rosh Chodesh, that's Hanukkah. We say Al HaNisim, not Aleph Yavo. But if they didn't ask me, so why do I have to stick my 2 cents in? And if they do ask me, that I don't always have to answer. My son once came to me and he asked me a question and I said, why do you ask? And he said, why don't you answer? And I said, because I suspect that you asked this of your teacher and your teacher didn't know. So he smiled and said, you're right. So he said, what's the answer? And I said, I don't know. And he said, yes, you do. And I said, so tell me, what do I know? You're saying I know. What do I know? So he said, no, Abba, tell me. I said, what do I know? Ask your teacher. He doesn't know. Why do you think I know? I realized, as did he, that I would lose more by giving him the answer than I would gain. Because he'll come back and tell the teacher, you didn't know, but my Abba did. And I'll make the teacher look like a dunce in front of the class.
What would be wrong to say, let's look it up?
So once he came home, where he had said, he had asked the Rebbe a question, and the Rebbe didn't know the answer, so I sent him to the Rebbe with the Sefer. Let the Rebbe teach him from the Sefer. I'm saying, yeah, the...
No, but I mean, also at the right discussion, like,
sometimes, but if it's something that'll cause him to look down at his teacher, then I suspect I've lost more than I've gained.
I'm not talking about the discussion with the wife.
Oh, so wait, we'll get there slowly. We're just in the beginning. So the first thing the first thing is we have to realize that a lot of things are really not important. Does it really matter that Avram had more children from Keturah? Midan, Midian. Okay, so he had a bunch of children from Keturah. And what's going to change if they get it wrong? Sometimes you'll sit at the table. I remember we had two guests over, and they had a heated argument. Boy, it's already a legend in our house. They were ready to throw things at one another. Their argument was about what would happen if someone would be in the water and they wouldn't swim. So one guy said, a human being floats. And the other guy said, that's brilliant. Then why do people ever drown? So the first guy said, no, I'm telling you, there's such things as dead men. Why do dead bodies float? Because if a person would do nothing, he would float. So the other guy says, come on, don't you know people drown? People don't float. And they're arguing. They're ready to throw things at one another. And they look at me and I'm going like, huh, what do I know? I've never been dead. I don't know. They say dead bodies float, but I don't know. Why do I have to get involved? I'm going to be someone's friend and someone's enemy. They're very heated about this. Let them look it up. It's the middle of a Shabbos meal. To them, it made all the difference in the world. To me, it made no difference. So now imagine that the debate is between your wife and someone else. Why do you have to get involved, especially when she's wrong? Why?
Because I think education is important. And, I mean, sometimes people just say things about because of laziness. Don't take it. Like in the zoo, I go in the zoo with my daughter and I see all the parents just saying, oh, this is this and this is that. They don't even bother to read the sign. And all the kids think it's like the leopard is the tiger and the lion is something. I mean, that's wrong. Get the facts right. Don't be lazy, but do it in a nice way. You can say, okay, normally when you have a discussion, you quote something. You have to quote it from a book. You're not allowed to, you know, that's our tradition. What's wrong with our tradition? I mean,
so
that's probably why you should have a book around, because so you don't have those discussions.
So I think we have to discern between our expectations of ourselves and our expectations of others. I definitely agree with you that when we have expectations of ourselves, our expectations should be, let me verify and let me know that what I've said is correct, and if I'm wrong, then I should want to know that I'm wrong. But in my relationship with other people, that's not a fair approach. We all have our weaknesses, we all have our shortcomings, and we would not enjoy life if every time we said something, someone would call us on it. And the truth is,
children should think for 10 years that the leopard is a tiger because the parents didn't bother to read the sign.
Yeah. What will happen? What's the, so the child will think the leopard is a tiger. The child will anyways reach that wonderful age of adolescence where he'll wonder if there's anything more silly and less informed than his parents. That happens anyways. It's going to get there. Like I tell parents sometimes, your children are at an age where you're the least intelligent person in their life. In Malasot, kids reach that age.
That change of guidance and boundaries, not necessarily your intellect.
Let's talk in 10 years. Let's see. I that hasn't been my experience in the last 20 years, but let's see. Coming back to relationships with our spouse, so the first thing to remember is that even if she's arguing with her sister, with her parents, with a guest, and even if you think she's wrong, if it doesn't make a world of a difference, they're discussing, when do you make Kiddush when you land on the moon? And they're having a heated discussion. Now, you happen to have read the response about it, and she didn't. And she's quoting you wrong. So, why do you have to get involved? You will be there in conversations when she says, I remember my husband told me this article. The rabbi said that when you go to the moon, you count 7 days from when it was Shabbos in Jerusalem when you took off. And you're thinking, that's not exactly what I said. That's not what it said in the response. Does it matter? I understand it's halachic. I understand. I don't think she's going to the moon. I don't think your guest is going to the moon. And I don't think anyone's taking notes on this discussion. So even though it's halachic, it doesn't really matter.
Just much more complicated.
Maybe, or else maybe later on you came across it. And
that's the thing I had to the landlord. I said no to the landlord, and then the landlord went behind, and I talked to my wife. The same thing.
So that, I agree with you that it might be wise to avoid the subject in future conversations with the guest as well. But I want us to continue. I began with the simplest example. Let's move on to examples that have more meaning. She has an argument with her parents about a monetary issue, and she's wrong. She has an argument with the landlord about a monetary issue, and she's wrong. She has an argument with a hired help, and you think she's in the wrong. So now you're faced with a situation where you don't agree with her. And the situation has practical ramifications. You made up with your in-laws that when you go on a family trip, you will chip in 50-50 on the gas. And after the trip, your in-laws say, you know, you guys never chipped in the 50-50. And you're about to reach into your wallet and you're feeling very bad because you remember you did agree and you can't believe you forgot. And suddenly you hear your wife saying, no, Mom, don't you remember you promised you're covering all the gas? Boom. Now what? But she thinks you're wrong. She thinks you're wrong. She thinks that you made up that you're not paying. She's saying, we agreed, they're covering the gas. You're going to a family event, or you hire a carpenter. The carpenter did the work. You bought something in a store, and your wife says, this came damaged. And you're thinking, maybe it got damaged on the way home. Maybe we didn't buy it damaged. And she's coming back to the store owner and saying, I demand a full refund. You gave me damaged goods. Before you had a chance to think, she's made the statement. You don't agree with her. You think maybe he does not owe you a full refund. Maybe you're in the wrong. The landlord comes up and says, you guys damaged the front entrance. And you know that you did take your stroller up and scraped off the paint off the front entrance, and that has to be repaired. And before you could say anything, your wife says, that's a public entrance. You have no idea who damaged the entrance. There's no way we're going to pay for that. Wait a second. But you know you did.
Goodbye.
What?
It says the last
effort. It could go the other way, too. Your wife agreed to pay, and you're thinking, who said we did the damage? The landlord walked in and said, you damaged the front entrance. And your wife says, just a second, how much does the painter cost? And you're thinking, 500 people go up and down the stairwell. How does she know we did that damage? Why is she ready to pay? Take it the other way. It doesn't matter which direction you're going to go. Okay. Yes, sir.
Just to understand what you're saying now, is it not a good question to ask if it's two separate issues, one being monetary laws and the other being national loyalty?
That's exactly. I don't think it's Lashon Hara at this point.
No,
there's a practical question.
I said Lashon Hara, but I meant to say loyalty.
So that's where we're going to get to right now.
But the monetary laws, you're going to cover that also? Or?
Right. Okay. So let's begin with the question that should be at the basis of this discussion. And that is that there are two sides to one coin here. On the one end, I'm going to be fiercely loyal to her. On the other hand, she's going to take it very personally if I don't agree with her. And in the male psyche, we think, if she's wrong, she's wrong. And it has nothing to do with my loyalty. I love her, I'm loyal to her, she's important in my life, but that doesn't make her right. I'm not saying the male approach is wrong. I'm saying we have to be aware of two things. Now let's implement what we learned 2 weeks ago. It's not only a question of achati yonati tamati, that in my mind she's number one, I have to make her feel like she's number one. So what my solution is going to be has to incorporate two things. I have to ensure that she feels like she's number one, and I have to realize that she will take it personally when I disagree with her. Now I have to balance those two and get to the right solution. If we do or don't, though, you could take the case in the opposite scenario, where she agreed to pay, and you're thinking, why should we pay for the painting of the whole entrance? The whole building uses that entrance. It's true that we damaged it to some degree. Other people damaged it to another degree. They have to paint it once a year anyways. We should cover the paint job for everyone, but she already said yes. Okay? If you prefer, you want her to be the sweet giving temperament, and you'll be the one who's saying no. Doesn't matter. I'm saying, I gave one example. You could take another example. What? Say there, I don't mind. I'm saying whichever way you go, it I don't see the relevance. The bottom line is, if you take those two into account, then your conversation is going to play itself out differently. You're not going to have the conversation in front of the landlord. You're going to say, you know what? I hear what you're saying. You tell your wife. You tell the landlord, I'd like to discuss it with my wife. We'll get back to you. Rule number one, we try to avoid having conversations in front of other people. The landlord will try to pressure you. You know, I need to know. The painter's here. Okay, we'll try to get back to you in 5 minutes. It can be your in-laws. It could be the landlord. It could be the painter. You are always entitled to say, give me time. We have to talk. So number one, if we want to accomplish anything with this conversation, it shouldn't be in anyone else's presence. I have no reason to enter a battle of egos, to perhaps shame her in front of other people, or her shame me in front of other people. So that's rule number one. Yes?
So if it's like with the in-laws, can you say, excuse us, we go to another room for 1 minute? Or?
If it's with the in-laws, then I think you must say, excuse us, we will get back to you. Don't limit yourself to a minute. Give yourself a day. Yeah. That's one of the rules. We didn't get there yet, but that's one of the rules we will discuss later on, that you're always entitled to tell your in-laws, we'll talk about it and get back to you. And sometimes your in-laws will say, talk! And you'll say, I'm not sure we can leave the table. We didn't bench yet. You can be very blunt. We'll talk about it in private and we'll get back to you. But that's a part of a whole other class. We'll get there. Yes?
I can tell you why. Because if you're not doing that, people will see that you're not strong together as a couple and they'll use it.
Okay.
The Balabite going to use it. Everybody's going to use it.
I'm not even going there. I'm saying it in respect to your respecting yourself and respecting your relationship. It shouldn't be in other people's presence.
What people will do to get their business through, if they can see if two couples are not, together on the decision, if they discuss it in front of the salesman, and you, they're like really bad at this.
Yes. And the books on sales, they actually teach you how to use that to your advantage. That's true. Coming back to... So point number one, we said not in the presence of other people. Point number two, we're going to enter the conversation with the realization that I have to first impress upon her that I respect her position and our relationship is number one, and that's not in question. And like we said, it's not a question of what's going on in my mind. It's a question of impressing that upon her. And then point number three, we will still discuss later on. We bring it up as a point of discussion. It's not, the landlord's 100% right. I don't know why you're giving him a hard time. You know and I know that we did 10 times more damage. We have a stroller that has metal spokes that come out. Every time we go up the steps, we're the ones that scrape off all the paint. Why shouldn't we pay for that paint job? Whereas if you come into the conversation gently, I was wondering how you see it. I was wondering if maybe we don't have a stroller that's different. When I see other people's strollers, I don't see that theirs have these metal spokes sticking out like we do. And I did notice many times that I went up and down the steps that we scraped off paint. I really do think we have a responsibility to cover what we damaged. And sometimes it pays to tell her, why don't we take the way we both see it and ask a shayla? It's a halachic question. Let's verify. I'm not sure I'm right. I hear what you're saying. You're saying there's a lot of damage and they have to paint it anyways once a year. Why should we foot all the bill even though we have a certain responsibility? I hear your point. Let's ask. Let's verify. But we have to remember, point number one, that loyalty has to be expressed. Not in words necessarily, but we have to ensure that that emotion is there. I wanted to touch on one more point. I didn't hear you.
So you said number one premise is that she's number one. Number two premise is that the number two step is that you ask her what she thinks about this.
No, point the we said the two sides of the coin is A, I'm loyal to her, and B, she will take it personally. I have to remember that she will take it personally. If I bear those two facts in mind, then I will lead the conversation gently in a way that hopefully will not offend her.
Okay.
That doesn't mean I have to forgo what I think is correct, but it means I have to work with those two factors in mind.
True. The reason I'm asking is because you said something that I thought was a list of three items. You said,
right.
Okay,
and then I'm saying once you have those two in mind, then you could bring it up gently and discuss it, and you don't have to come down and say, I think you're wrong.
Right. Okay, so we're on the same page.
Okay. There's an area which is very dangerous, which is with regards to kids. Children will sometimes try to play the parents. It is very common. It is very normal. Children know. It's shocking for me sometimes to hear the kids. A kid will ask me, Abba, can I have juice? And an older one will elbow him and say, don't ask him, ask Ima. A kid will ask my wife, can we have Shabbos party? And another kid will elbow him, wait, Ima's about to go rest for Shabbos, ask Abba. You know, they know how to play us, and that's legitimate. That's fine. The time where it gets complicated is, A, if one parent gave an answer, and they try to go to the other parent, it has to be clear to them that that won't be tolerated in the house. If you got an answer from your mother, why are you asking your father? And if you're going to ask me, you have to tell me that you asked your mother and she gave you an answer. I'm willing to discuss it with her. But I'm not willing for you to be dishonest with me after you got one answer from your mother to come and ask me. I tell me that your mother gave you an answer. As you guys see, hopefully, that your wives know better than you and how to raise the kids, then you will get into the habit of asking, did you ask your mother? Before you answer. Or let me ask your mother. She will factor in things that you don't factor. As good as a parent as you are, hopefully she will have a better vantage point and she will factor in things you can't factor, that she knows as a mother. But the issue where it gets very complicated is if parents allow what they call in psychology a triangle to evolve, where there are alliances in the house. And this can very easily happen when kids become teenagers, where it's father and daughter against mother, where it's son and mother against father. That can't happen. There has to be a clear message to the kids that there's loyalty between the parents. The best thing you can do for a child is give them the feeling that Abba and Ima are together. We're one unit. And even if sometimes we'll say different things, that can happen, but we're still trying to function as one unit. It's very easy to fall into that type of triangle, and that should not happen. And if you see it happening, then you have to discuss it with your wife, realize what's happening, and find a way out. Step one is the agreement between the two of you that the loyalty you have to one another is more important than almost any subject that will arise.
The what?
The loyalty you have to one another is more important than almost any subject that will arise. So if you think it's dangerous for the kid to go swimming with his class, and your wife thinks it's a great idea for him to go swimming with the class, it's very easy to make a big issue out of it and say, it's dangerous, people drown, and there's no way for them to keep an eye on so many kids, and I know kids in a pool, and it's rowdy, and you could feel very vindicated in putting your foot down. Well, it depends on your relationship with your wife. If your wife understands that this means a lot to you, and you think it's legitimate that it means a lot to you, hopefully she'll give in. But what happens if she doesn't give in? And she says, you're a party pooper. You know, you're always worried. Everywhere they go, you're worried. They go to a Luna Park, you say, who checked the Luna Park? Maybe, you know, kids fall out of roller coasters. You heard the other day a roller coaster stopped midway and fell and many people died. It happens. And you're thinking, and she says, you know, roller coasters run every day and nothing happens. You're always scared. They want to go to the zoo. So you notice that there's no fence by the bear. And you're right. A child once climbed in there. But, you know, every day people go to the zoo. So you find dangers in everything. No way the kid's going swimming. And you see that she's fire and brimstone on this point. And you're really nervous. And she's saying, I know you're nervous. You're nervous about everything. Well, you might have to swallow your nervousness and sit there saying Tehillim the whole time there in the pool, I don't care. But what you have to realize is that the harm that you inflict when you're divisive in front of the kids is by far worse than that imagined danger. The schools generally do things that are safe. And generally, kids make it through school. Believe it or not, most kids live to tell the tale. You have to realize how dangerous it is. Bemet dangerous when the kids see that rift between you. And people don't give that the proper priority. That has to be given a very, very high priority. There's very little. It's a rarity that there will be a situation where it's really legitimate to let that loyalty wear away. Because if you two cannot reach an agreement, she says you're a party pooper, and you say it's really dangerous. I know a parent who the school wanted to take the kids roller skating, and he said, that's dangerous, kids break their hand roller skating. And the parents wanted to take the kids to a baseball game, and the parents said, that's dangerous, kids get lost, you know, they're kidnappings, they can't keep an eye on all these kids. And every trip they wanted to take, he was paranoid. But you know what? His wife went with him. And the kids never went on a school trip. I'm not saying it was a good decision. It was a bad decision. But it was a good decision not to destroy their relationship over it. Maybe she should have brought him to her turf. Maybe she should have brought a third party into the picture to calm him down. But what she should not have done was make World War III over it. I'm not saying that a wife should always give in or a husband should always give in. Sometimes you have to try to bring the other one to your turf. But you do have to realize that the harm that's done, I accompanied that kid from his childhood to his marriage. And that kid is, Baruch Hashem, a healthy, thriving adult. So he didn't go on class trips, not roller skating, every year. Conversation went on every year. I tried talking to the parents and there was no one to talk to. No way, roller skating is dangerous, kids break their hands, I don't need a broken wrist, I don't need a broken hand. He had all the reasons in the world. Every other kid can go roller skating, his kid didn't go roller skating. Fine. His kid happened to be in a school where every year for Pesach they'd bring roller skating to the school and every kid would get free roller skates. But no, he said no. Every year they went on a Lag Bomer trip to a baseball game. Nope, never went, never allowed his son to go. So you think the kid's horrible? No, the kid managed. He's fine. He's happy. He's healthy. And he's a father of his own family today, and nothing happened. But what would... What? And his kids are allowed to go. Yes, he sends his kids roller skating. Yeah, he, you know. I'm saying, but the mother made a smart choice. I tried talking to the husband. She tried talking to the husband. We got nowhere. In his mind, this was a real fear. Who knows what can happen? Fine. What can you do? We each have our quirks.
What's the damage?